Welcome to the Life in the Stocks podcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Matt Stocks. I'm the host, and the show features unedited, in-depth, candid conversations with a wide range of musicians, actors, comedians, and creatives. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to Life in the Stocks on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and indeed all major podcast platforms. Be sure to give me a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well, at Matt Stocks DJ. That way you can keep up to date with all of my live Q&A dates, my DJ performances, and of course, who's coming up on the show as well. But without further ado, let's crack on with the show, shall we? Here we go.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Crunch this.
Yep. You got to record the opening of a can. Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably have a few more beers today and have a little tip. Yeah, sure, mate.
Cheers, buddy. Great to meet you.
Good on you, mate.
Yeah, cheers. No, thank you.
And time. Beautiful day for it. So to set the scene for everybody listening, we're in Carlton, Melbourne. Beautiful sunny day, Sunday afternoon here with Ross from the Cosmic Psychos. It is, Ross, the end of an incredible time in your country for me. I've been here 3 months. I go home on Tuesday.
Unreal.
2 days' time. And I knew before I left I needed to sit down and do one of these with you, especially in Melbourne. So much I want to talk to you about. This is the last day. I don't usually ask people about how tour's going because, you know, there's a million interviews like that. But it does bear just touching upon here because today is the last day of what's been a pretty extensive Australian tour, hasn't it, for you guys with Zeke?
Yeah, it's been unreal, actually. Yeah, right down the East Coast. So it's been unreal. And they are just, they're 100%. They are just such a good band to watch and just to, I don't know how they do it. But it's just a full assault on all senses.
Yeah.
And it's almost when you're watching them, you're almost begging them to stop so you can have
a
breath.
That's why you chose them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they are just great. And I can't believe, we all know the same people because, you know, hanging out in Seattle for the last 35 years. I'd never met them. Like, I'd run into Jason, the bass player, a couple of times, but we'd always be in separate parts of the world, so...
Right, I would have assumed it was a friendship that did date back to the 90s when you were meeting the rest of those guys. But no, this is the first time you've spent proper time together.
It's unbelievable that we just kept missing each other's paths.
Well, everything happens when it's supposed to, right?
Well, absolutely. And maybe it's a good time because when we're all younger and a little bit looser, maybe we wouldn't be still sitting here today. If we'd joined forces back in the 90s, because those boys have done it hard.
Do they still go hard as well?
Oh, they've learnt to stay alive, shall we say.
Moderate.
Yeah, moderate and just like we all do now.
Yeah.
So, and...
I mean, it doesn't look very moderate around here, Ross, I'm not going to lie.
Well, However, I'm 62 years old and I'm still staying up till 4 o'clock every morning having a beer.
Well, I have a theory on that. Aside from the physical health, I think rock and roll keeps you young. And you only need to look at Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, right, to see that in effect. Playing this music, living this life, staying connected to the source, whatever it is, however you define the muse and the drive, I think it keeps you young, man, because you see people your age who are in office jobs their whole lives or, you know, manual labor, which I know you do as well, and something about that life can become soul-crushing and back-breaking, and it can grind people down, can't it?
Oh, yeah, and look, you only got to listen to Hackney Diamonds, like the Stones' new album, which is just like, it's like it was recorded in 1976, some of it. It's actually, I heard it when I was actually over in Seattle, and I went, what the hell? I go, this is something a bit different. Mm. And it was just, yeah, and the life. You don't look at, you just, how can, it's like taking an 85-year-old car down the highway at 100 miles an hour. They can still do it.
Still feels good.
Yeah. And you can tell they're having fun, which is unreal.
That's what I love about you guys, you know, is you talk the talk, but you walk the walk as well. And it ain't no show with you guys, you know, you really live it and you are it, you embody it.
Well, we have fun, you know, because for a band that doesn't rehearse, we live in different parts of the country. Dean and I only live like an hour away. Macca lives 2 hours away by plane. But every time we hit the stage, we have fun. It's like three blokes getting together and just having a, I don't know, just getting back together.
Well, I should also point out that you're staying in an Airbnb with the band, which I've never seen before. I've done a lot of these in hotel rooms over the years, and usually people on tour like to kind of, maybe whether they like to or not, I don't know, but they just do. They isolate themselves in the hotel rooms, and that's why, without going dark, I think that's why you get a lot of these overdoses or whatever they are, is because, you know, all that time alone in your own head after coming off stage performing to however many people, surely it's better to bond and enjoy the camaraderie and spend time with each other after the shows, around the shows.
Yeah, before, during and after. It's like we just like hanging out and just, you know, the bullshit that we go on about all day and then continue for that.
That's,
you know,
what we should be recording.
And continuing for 45 minutes to an hour on the stage, and it doesn't stop, and the shit just keeps flowing after we finish. And honestly, the only injury we're going to finish up with will be a busted laugh muscle, basically. So it's quite easy.
Dude, I love it. Watching the documentary, I've watched it a couple of times. When I landed, I've just like immediately, almost as soon as my feet touched Australian soil, I was asking friends who live here, like, tell me Australian films, documentaries, bands. I wanted to just immerse myself in the culture and some of the popular culture history. And my friend Jeff, who plays in a few bands around town, he was like, you got to watch Blokes You Can Trust. Watch that. I was familiar with the band, loved the music, but had no idea about some of the, you've mentioned Seattle a couple of times, about some of the connections there and the very early kinship that those grunge bands and you guys forged.
Oh, yeah, it was unreal. It was just that it was I can only explain it as, look, there's so many good bands came out of Seattle in that scene, which I always felt that we weren't a part of. But I think we brought the clown element to it all and took the edge off anyone trying to be cool.
Yeah, right.
Because, like, when I first, my first photo of Mudhoney ever saw, this hair and their sunglasses, and I'm going, oh, they're almost that cool. I hope I never meet them. You know, it turns out Lucan turns out to be one of my best friends of all time, and they're all great guys, and I love the band extremely. They're all fantastic fellas, and yeah, then there's the Young Nirvanas of the world, and Tad, and you see bands like Soundgarden arise from a little place to be the biggest band in the world, and then there's your Pearl Jams, and there's just every, like, it's just, and they're all good people.
And yeah, you were right there, weren't you, before they blew up, so you saw.
Well, you're watching it all evolve, which was incredible. Just going, what the hell? You know, it was like when the world cottoned onto it, it cottoned onto it really quick. And it was like, what the hell's going on? Because, you know, we'd known of these bands, and it's almost disappointing. There's so many bands that didn't explode, and they were just as bloody good. Mm. You know, they were incredible bands.
How did you guys make waves over there pre-internet? How did that word of mouth travel?
It was
other than word of mouth.
Yeah, snail mail.
Right.
Record shops. I think like people like Mark Arm would. He was a big fan of underground fanzines and just records, I guess. So I guess the Sub Pop put a record out, but even before then, he would have dug some Down on the Farm record out of some grungy record shop.
Album,
some,
right?
Yeah, the yeah. first EP. It's just word of mouth. And letters, people writing to you and writing back. Because you couldn't ring anyone because it was too expensive. It's like $6 a minute to call. But no, it's snail mail, mate. That's all it was.
That's unreal.
Yeah, which is...
There's a magic to that time. I grew up at a very interesting cross-section in communication history because I didn't have a mobile or the internet at all as a kid, but then it came in when I was probably about 17, 18 was when I started to really use the internet. So I had a whole kind of, upbringing without it, so experienced that life and then could enjoy adulthood with the benefits of it and was right there at that intersection. But I do think, without being too blissfully reminiscent, there was a real magic about that form of discovery and communication where you had to work at it.
Yeah.
And it meant more.
And if you wanted to go and see a band, you actually physically had to go and see them. You could not get on your computer machine and press a button and go, I might go and see them. They don't look too bad. You actually had to go to a pub and you had to buy a beer and you had to pay money to get in and then you had to see them. It might have only been $5, but it was that whole night out. Which it still happens. I know the pub scene's still going, but back in those days, it was just like I'd look at the gig guide, come down from the country, and look at the gig guide and go, "Well, that name sounds interesting. Never heard of him. That sounds interesting." And work your evening out, going to see all these different bands to see who you liked and who you didn't like.
What's the name of that gig guide? Famous gig guide that Melbourne has distributed for many years, and it used to apparently be like the size of a phone book, and now it's reduced to like a leaflet. Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah,
it's a famous local cultural listings thing.
Yeah, the one I used to look at back in the 70s and early 80s, it was in the Age newspaper, and there was three pages of gigs. I'm just trying to think of what it was called. Bit of grey matter happening. But yeah, it was like three or four pages of bands, and you could just troll down. And then it got thinner and thinner and thinner and then just disappeared. But I'm just trying to think of it now. Oh, bloody hell. It'll come back to me.
I'll add it in post.
Yeah.
So set the scene for me in the 80s or even perhaps the 70s around Melbourne. Because there was a dark underbelly to this city back then.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there? And much like London, now it's become very gentrified and hipster. But then, totally different case, right? And if you were going out, there was danger and excitement around every corner.
Oh yeah, like when I was a young bloke trying to find a place to drink, I would end up down at Bojangles in St Kilda, where Chopper Reed and his mates, all the underworld, used to go down there. That you'd be lining up for a beer and everyone's wearing gold chains and very heavily set and dangerous looking people. I'm 18 just wanting a beer on a Sunday. So mingling in there, and then a lot of that kind of dark stuff sort of developed into a lot of the music going around as well. Like, I've always said there was two kinds of scenes around when I was young and growing up, and there was cool or there was fool, and I preferred the fool.
So we'd call the bin birthday party.
Yeah, fool, boys next door. I used to go and see them all the time. And birthday party and just a heap of bands around that. The World, that was Roland Howard's, one of his first bands and stuff. And I used to go and see all this stuff, but I got, and all power to the birthday party. Fucking amazing, incredible. And, Nick Coe's one of Australia's greatest exports, I think. But I just didn't fit. And I like hanging around with my grandfather, but I don't want to go to a gig and smell everyone wearing their grandfather's jackets. I was more of a black T-shirt, have a bit of fun, get pissed, and really fucking life it up. I didn't want to stand around and look cool. It was analysed too much. It was good shit, and I used to go a lot. But, for me, it just wasn't me. It wasn't me. I'm all about fun. There's no fun in depression.
No.
So, yeah, I just...
There's enough shit in the world, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, instead of going out and being hanging out the dark side 24-7. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
We all go there and we all experience those things, but you don't necessarily need to live in that space, do you?
Yeah, no, when I want to go...
There's great art to be made there.
Yeah, oh, bloody oath. It's because of that great art's made, but no, I just prefer just to go out and have fun. Smile.
Yeah.
Wake up with a terrible headache and go, fuck.
Here we go again.
Let's do it again.
So who were the bands for you then? Because you guys, and we'll talk a little bit more about the influence you had on other bands, but for you, starting out as a songwriter, as a performer and a singer and all of that stuff, who were the, you know, leading lights of inspiration for you?
Well, my first album was Slade Alive.
Great.
And I played
Wolverhampton's finest. I'm from Birmingham.
Absolutely. And I could play that album with my eyes closed on a tennis racket. That's how much I played it. And I was just nothing but a Slade head.
Because that's proper. I always say to people who don't like Slade or people who just know them for the Christmas song, like, without Slade, there'd be no Oasis. They were the original English yob rock, you know, stadium size anthemic band. You know, they'd have all the football fans in the 70s singing those songs. Like, it was proper, you know, whoa.
I don't think, you hear their live recordings. I don't think there'd be an AC/DC. I really don't. They just, that rough sound, like you listen to their records, but you listen to their live recordings, they are heavy as fuck. You know, they're just great. So that was that sort of the glam rock part.
Yeah.
And then Akadaka sort of hit and fell in love with them.
Now, when was the first time you saw them?
And you
saw them with Bond, I presume?
Yeah. Saw them with Bond. I actually saw them live at the Sydenham Town Hall when I was about 16, when they used to probably play 3 or 4 shows a night around the circuit. And I didn't really know who they were. To get in to see them, no, I couldn't get into the hall. And it was surrounded by blokes drinking long neck beers and looking like they wanted to kill people. So it was a bit of a trying time for a 15, 16-year-old. And then all that stuff. And then I was a huge Kiss fan, like early Kiss.
I mean, they were inescapable at that time. I've had Gene and Paul on the show, and I one of probably the highlights of my life and career is I was invited by Kiss to go on the Kiss cruise and do some live interviews and DJ. Yep. And for me, they were like, you know, larger than life and so escapist and just, I think they changed a whole generation of kids and the way they looked at music, didn't they? And they enabled them to like buy into the fantasy and the over-the-top nature of rock and roll.
Unbelievable. Yeah, actually, you would have been on my, one of my best mates has done, went on that couple of Kiss cruises.
Yeah, they're so much fun.
Yeah, it just looks amazing. Amazing. No, so Kiss was a big thing. And then it was...
talking my language, Ross, I've got to say. Oh, this is all the music I love.
Well, the thing is then, I remember coming home...
Motorhead, another one?
No, that was a little bit later on. Because what happened is I come home from school one day and my mum goes, I've just read an article in the newspaper and there's a thing called punk rock. And he goes, apparently they urinate on themselves and they vomit. And she goes, I hope you never get involved in that. And I went, nah, I'm Kiss through and through, mum, no problem.
And how old are you at this point? So this is at like 73, 74?
75, so I was 15, 16. And I went, oh yeah. And then I saw on this music program in Australia called Countdown. It was the only way in I had, because I couldn't pick up any radio up the farm. Like it would fade in and out, so it was really hard to stay up with what was going on. And then I heard a band called The Saints. Right. I saw them and I went, shit, that's all right. And at the same time, my mate, whose older sister was going to art school in Sydney, was getting involved in the Radio Birdman Saints scene.
Now, very quickly, what I think is fascinating and incredible about that specific time period, say 1976, is, again, there's no internet, so there's no speed of information, but in England, New York, and Australia, around exactly the same time, are these bands that are beginning to give birth to this thing that's about to break called punk.
Yeah.
And how it's all happening at the same time is kind of magic.
It's weird, isn't it?
Because, you know, the Ramones and the Saints aren't worlds apart musically, but they can't have known about each other at that time.
I mean,
it's just whatever culturally is going on.
unless you jumped on one of them big aeroplanes and flew over there and watched a gig with 10 yeah. people there and 10 people there.
And then took it back with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unreal. So I got really introduced to a lot of stuff through Victoria, and she was – and we'd get cassettes. She'd make cassettes for us. So, you know, I went from Kiss to Saints, Birdman, Modern Lovers, Richard Hell and the Voidoids, Television.
All the great
stuff. Just all starting to just enter my head. And then, of course, latched onto the English stuff and, you know, and all that early punk stuff, you know, Clash and Buzzcocks and just that first run. And then from there, I went back. Then I went back and then discovered the Stooges, which I'd never really paid any attention. I always go back, not forward, when I chase the music roots.
Me too. Well, that my friend has a phrase called tracing the fruit to the root.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Perfect, yeah. And that's how it all started to develop. And then basically it was the Ramones that gave me the confidence to go, you know what? I think I'll give up the tennis racket and I might buy a bass guitar because I love D.D. Ramone. And it was just so simple. And I thought, if he can do it and they can do it, maybe I can do it.
Did you ever see the Ramones live?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first time they came to Australia was up at La Trobe University. Would have been 300 people there. I was probably three people, like an empty room, but packed at the stage. Incredible. Incredible. I got to meet Joey once. In New York, in the Continental, he walked in to have a look at the renovations. Just staggered in on his sticks, and it was just like I was just turned into a shivering mess.
So they're one of those few bands for you that still kind of loom large as this life-changing band. We should say at this point, Ross is wearing a Ramones T-shirt, ladies and gentlemen.
I very rarely wear band shirts, but this is a I've always had one of these, so. It's me pajamas, mate.
Love it.
They just made it accessible. Just made thinking, well, I can do that. And you don't have to be some kind of fucking genius or do lessons or whatever. Just make it up.
Musical virtuoso or anything, yeah.
Yeah, just make it up. So, and I'm still doing it.
So you promised your parents you weren't going to go into punk rock. You did. What was their reaction when you did? Were they terrified about the outcome? Were they supportive? Were they thinking this is just a passing phase? We'll let him indulge for a bit and see.
Nah, they were. My old man was a bit of a bastard, and he really got into me because I used to make my own punk rock badges. I'd buy NME and Melody Maker, and cut out pictures and make my own badges. And then one day, my mum found me sniveling shits record. I Can't Come, which has got like a bloodstained bed.
And I've never heard of that. Wow, that's as punk as it gets.
Oh, it's a great hat.
I can't come.
And on the other side, it's Terminal Stupid and I Can't Come. It's great. It's like every second band in Melbourne at the moment sounds like the Snivelling Shits.
Right.
They're fucking great. I love them. One of my favourite all-time bands.
Amazing. The Snivelling Shits.
Snivelling Shits.
Brilliant.
Look them up.
Yeah,
I can't come and Terminal Stupid. And you'll just hear so much modern, and there's nothing wrong with that, but a lot of bands sound like it. Fucking great. It's really, really good stuff.
Well, it's good to know that that's where that comes from, because I was up in Queensland last month, did a couple of DJ gigs up there, up on like the Gold and the Sunshine Coast, and a bunch of punk bands played the venue I was DJing one night, and they were, as all bands do, you start out, you know, half your set's covers, right, because you don't have enough original material to fill a set. And all of those bands were covering the Chats and Amel and the Sniffers as if they were like, you know, your Ramones or the Clash when
Unreal.
You guys would have been starting. And that is the impact of those bands. Should we just move out of the sun a little bit?
Yeah, just a little bit.
That was the impact. Well, that is the impact, sorry, of those bands at this point in time in Australia. And it's phenomenal because they've enjoyed so much success already. But it was just so amazing for me to see how in this country, on their home turf, they're like heralded as, you know, these leading lights of rock and roll.
It's great. It's fantastic. It's like the only reason we're going all right overseas at the moment is on the back of this resurgence. And I'm like going, people go, how do you feel about that? And I go, unreal.
Well, it is amazing because you have obviously inspired those two bands and they'd, you know, readily admit that. But it's great that they're now paying the favour back, as it were, and you know, taking you guys out. Yeah. And you recently did a series of, I was gutted, I missed this, but I hadn't connected with Matt yet at this point. But you did three dates recently in Melbourne, didn't you, to kind of celebrate 40 years of the
Cyclos. Yeah, yeah.
And you had Amel headline one night, the Chats headline another.
Yeah, yeah, and the
what a beautiful synergy. And
it was great, because the best thing about that is we didn't play last.
Yeah, right.
Because we could pull the... Because no, you're playing last. We'll play early because we want to sit back and enjoy. It was perfect. And you know, the Chats just took us on a month in America. And we got to play in front of more people on that tour than what the 25 years of previously touring America. Like you said, they're doing 1,000 to 1,500 seaters. So we get to play in front of a completely new audience.
Who are all going to like what you do because... You know, the similarity is...
Well, they've got no choice because they're there to see the Chats and they don't want to move, so it doesn't matter.
Right. And you have Sean from X-Ray as your agent as well, don't you, both bands?
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the UK.
And no, he does.
I've seen you on Hellfest.
Yeah, how's that one?
Have you been there before?
No, I haven't.
Mate, I've got to tell you, I've done a lot of festivals in my time and that, for me, is the best festival in the world.
Unreal.
Just wait till you get there. The site is like... And you'll know, because, you know, Mad Max comes from Australia. It's like Mad Max.
Unreal.
You know, the set design. You ever done Glastonbury?
Nah.
Similar vibe to that.
Yeah.
Just really, you know, visionary stage production. And it feels like you're entering in this immersive world of just heavy metal, punk, rock and roll.
Well,
and
I'm
the
looking...
lineups every year are just obnoxiously great.
Well, I think we're first on the main stage. So first on, first drunk. So
great.
I'll be able to enjoy the day.
You'll have the best. And you can literally, there's the two main stages you can just pivot between, but then there's a whole other punk zone called the War Zone.
Right.
And that's it. So that's very Mad Max. It's all like, you know,
unreal.
Spiky iron fucking castle structures.
Now I'm looking really looking forward to
it's
it.
It's going
to
be mega.
Oh, yeah. I'll just walk around with my mouth open going, Struth.
Here we are. And again, like, I guess because of those bands and the success that they're enjoying, people are discovering you guys, but also they are, you know, taking you out and saying, well, we wouldn't be here without these guys. And that's a beautiful thing.
Because
not every band does that, do they? Sometimes they just go, yeah, we're original. We came up with this. And they don't, you know,
but no,
acknowledge who led the way.
And I like their attitude, the way, look, you know, we basically took the Chats out on their first run. And that was just so young. But lovely blokes. And it was really good that their van broke down or they lost their driver. And we said, just jump in with us, fellas, you'll be right. And same with the Sniffers, just took them out early. And you could just tell that they were really, yeah, there was something about them. So, yeah, you know, we watch on with pride is a stupid term, but I'm excited to see how well they're going. And the work ethic of like, just those two bands, for instance, is incredible. They work hard at it. They really work. I hope they don't overwork themselves.
Well, that is the mistake that so many bands make. I think it is different now because there's more of a awareness around mental health and there isn't that same philosophy of just like, we're going to send you out on tour for 18 months and you know, we don't care about how much you might be silently suffering. We're here to make money, so let's put you to work. I think we do live in a different time now.
Yeah.
But it's also hard, I think, to have the foresight that sometimes, you know, maybe you just need 6 months off. You don't need to follow that tour with a new record, with another tour, with another record.
Well, it's about, I think you'd need, if you're struggling to come up with ideas, take 6 months off and get a shitty job. Just go back. Go back to where it all starts. Have to get up for work. Have a shit-house boss. Have a real mongrel of a time from Monday to Friday. And then... go and relax on a weekend. Pull it all back to where it started. That's why I've never done this full time, and I never would. You got to have a job. You got to have things to give you the shits, because otherwise, for me, it's a different world. You know, flying around. I mean, it's great. You don't have to do much, but I'd rather. You know, you've got to have things giving you the shits.
I love that. I've never heard anybody break it down like that before, but that's wisdom. Right there, Ross. Working class wisdom.
Yeah, well, it's life, really. I mean, I just can't. And you see it. I've seen it. Some bands, not all bands, but make a lot of money, and then they've got nothing to write about. And then they
start writing about the industry.
Yeah, and then they start writing about going up there, putting their heads up their own assholes.
Yeah,
and then it's, no one wants to hear about that. But if you walk out to go to the shop and stub your toe and drop your beer bottle. Well, everyone does that. So let's keep it to walking This album's about walking to the shop and dropping your beer bottle. It's much easier.
So are you still on the farm?
Yeah, yeah, still there, mate.
You still have it? Because obviously you touch on in the documentary the fact that you might lose it. And
yeah, got pretty close there. I only held on just through the help of a lot of friends to organise some bridging finance and stuff. And I just paid the thing off. And next thing, I owe more money than the American government. But my philosophy is not to worry about it too much, because when you die, you're dead.
Yep.
So I don't give a fuck if I die in debt.
Yeah, right. I'm very much of that philosophy. Yeah. I've got a few thousand to my name, and I'm like, well, you know, they're not going to chase me to the other side to get that back, are they?
They're not going to dig you up and sit you up in court, because if you did, you'd
stink.
Well,
I mean, they can. Good luck.
Yeah, well, fucking up. Well, good on you, yeah. But no, you only got one go at it. But I like living there, and I've lived there, you know, all my life, basically, except for a little stint down here when I was young. But no, it's a beautiful spot. So, yeah, so still there, mate. Still got the dozers running.
That, which is it? Do the Hack is the cover.
Go the Hack, yeah. That was the old D7.
Iconic album cover that is.
Yeah.
It's become just, I think, so synonymous with the Aussie punk imagery. And who out of the Seattle scene did you get to, like, get down to the farm? Who have you had over there?
Well, I've had Mudhoney on multiple occasions. Ed Vedder comes up.
Love it.
Fucking everyone. Zeke came up for a barbie and a walk around the farm. I take him for a tour.
Do they all want to get on the bulldozer and recreate the photo?
Oh, L7 did. Yeah, L7 did. I had the dozer there, and they came up years and years ago, and they completely redid the photo.
Love it.
Which was really good.
I had Danita on the show. She's ace, man. What an amazing band they are.
They're just our mates. Yeah, we just always got along so well with them. They're just unreal.
Well, there's a beautiful series of events that we should talk about for anybody who's not seen the documentary or read up about it. Because my mate, when he was telling me, he's like, yeah, the influence of the Psychos, you know, goes all the way through to the Prodigy. And I'm like, well, how? Yeah. What? And then it's all explained in the documentary. The Fuel My Fire song is lifted from the L7 cover of your song Lost Cause. And that's that series of events there. And so the story goes, right, you can tell us that, is it Danita calls you in the middle of the night?
I remember it was about 2:30 in the morning, and the phone goes, because at landline, not a mobile, and I go, who the fuck's ringing me at 2:30 in the morning? So I pick up the phone, and it's Danita, and she's had a few beers. She goes, well, we've written this song and it sounds like Lost Cause, and she goes, can I play it to you? And I honestly, I couldn't. Over the phone, I'm going, whatever. Every song sounds the same anyway. I was like, fuck, there's only 12 chords in the world. She goes, oh, we'll credit you on the song. And I go, well, whatever. And, and then that came out on that album. And then, bugger me, Bob, the Crab of the Land or whatever that fucking was.
Fat of the Land with a crab on the cover.
With a crab on I knew I'd get there. and the Prodigy covered that song. So... Oh yeah, it was ridiculous, because everyone thought we were going to be millionaires. I mean, did we get any money out of it? Yeah, we got a few bucks, but not buying houses and ocean liners and Greek islands. It wasn't anything like that. But it was pretty funny, like the hype.
Yeah.
But the drummer at the time.
Well, I don't know how big they were in countries like, say, America, but certainly in the UK, they were like a cultural phenomenon.
They were huge. I liked them. They were great. It was the first time that kind of I only call it sort of like, you know, I don't know, warehouse ecstasy,
like
punk
dance
rock
music.
That was my first. I really liked him, because they did it with an attitude.
Well, he was clearly influenced by Johnny Rotten, wasn't he, Keith Flint? He could see just the way he wore his hair and his snarl, everything. He was like the dance punk Johnny Rotten, wasn't he?
Absolutely. No, I really liked him. I liked the stuff that they did, because they just had an attitude, and they sort of they sort of broke out of what was dance.
Mm.
They, as you said, the punk rock part was in there and stuff. So that was it. Now, they were huge in Australia. Massive. Massive. Now, I've got I don't buy many CDs, but I remember buying Breathe.
Yeah, right.
The single. I love that song.
It's a monster.
Oh, yeah.
That's in regular rotation in my DJ sets.
Yeah, it is just such a good song.
I have noticed that a lot of the musical tastes are very similar in Australia and the UK.
Yeah.
Like, for certain bands, like Robbie Williams, for instance, not a very punk rock reference, but we'll use him for the case of this conversation. He is as big over here as he was back home. He's certainly not anywhere near that big in America, but... And there's a lot of bands like that, like, you know, Prodigy, Oasis. There's these kind of bands that never really broke America in any way, but just as big over here as back home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. It's, I think there is that big connection.
Yeah.
I think, well, you know, it's the...
TV shows as well, Ross. Shows like Neighbours, Home and Away, Round the Twist, they were all like staple parts of our childhood, you know, television viewing
well,
in the 90s.
I was my favourite night of television, because I only had a TV with two stations, and Thursday nights on the ABC, which was basically the BBC,
yeah,
I'd watch the Dave Allen Show, and then I'd watch Monty Python.
Great.
And yeah, I'm a Python head, and all that, and, you know, which went on to the Young Ones, and stuff. I am just, that's my era, and all the British comedies, all the sitcoms.
Bottom big over here as
Oh,
well?
Oh, Bottom was great. Oh, yeah, don't worry. I was right there. Yeah, and Bottom, Blackadder, all that really cool stuff. Because I was growing up on, basically brought up on Benny Hill, Love Thy Neighbour, Steptoe and Son, because that's what my parents used to watch. So that British, it was that British humour connection, and not so much the American thing, like, American comedy, apart from South Park, I probably don't watch much.
It's the canned laughter, I find.
Yeah.
You're a bit like, here is the point where you're supposed to laugh.
Yeah. Oh. apart from F Troop. Go for F Troop, which was pretty funny when I was a kid.
Going back to your parents, sorry, we got sidetracked there. So they, your dad wasn't too thrilled with the whole punk rock.
Mm-mm. No, he used to, I remember when we were starting to tour a bit, we'd already been over to Europe once. I didn't go to the first tour of Europe because I bought a bulldozer with my old man. So someone filled in for me. But after the next year, I went to Europe for about 3 months. I remember the old, might have been Bill or Peter, called into the farm to pick me up to go somewhere. And unknown to me, the old man went out and he goes, "You've had your fun now. Now Ross has got to stay home and work. You've had your fun." Like, basically, piss off.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't know. It was Bill and Pete that told me about that. So, but in the end, it was a no brainer. Yeah, you can do both. I used to call it from Manhattan to Myanmar. You know, I'd be in New York 1 minute and back home lying under a bulldozer the next. So, you know, it was a good balance.
And again, I love that, and that is rare, because a lot of people, as soon as they get that meal ticket out, they're running away as fast as they can. But when you lose touch with your roots and what inspired you in the first place, that's when you do get lost in the more negative and destructive side of this game. And like what you were saying earlier, for you, keeping that connection to home life and hard work makes you enjoy all of this all the more.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably why you're still doing it and enjoying it to this day, right?
Well, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't enjoy it.
Love that.
I wouldn't care.
Because enough people do it and hate it, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, and hate their bandmates.
Like, it's like, yeah, for instance, last night, we're up in Ballarat. There's no band room in Ballarat. So there's a car park down the road. So we're just in the van, buy some beer, sit in the van for 6 hours when you're waiting to play. But I just sit there and go, this is what we got, this is what we get, and this is fine. And you just, it's a state of mind, not getting the shits because there's nowhere to sit or hide, or because we don't warm up or practice or do anything. I just sat there enjoying a can.
Love that you don't sound check. It's brilliant.
It's a fucking waste of time.
The first song, that's the sound check. Yeah.
Well, we just hit an open A when we walk on. If we can hear everything, we look at each other and just go, yeah, that'll do.
Now, has that backfired ever terribly where it's taken you half the gig to find some semblance of sound?
We don't play in stadiums, so
yeah, right.
Clubs can struggle with fallback and stuff, but again, after playing in the late 80s and the early 90s in little clubs in Spain and Italy and places that just don't have much, instead of complaining about it, as I said, you just look at it and go, there's one fallback wedge. You can't hear anything coming out of it. You get an electric shock when you get your mouth hits the microphone, but you go, well, this is what we've got to work with. So you just make it work and just go, that's it. That's it. You know, I played in clubs where people had to walk between me and the amp to get to the toilet. And I go, well, that's all right. Just don't stand on my pedal. It'll be fine because this is what we've got. It's not going to – complaining about it's not going to make it any better. Nah, so you just go, all right, that'll do.
I love it. Again, it's great attitude that so many people can learn from. I've always tried to maintain that. I've been DJing a lot whilst I've been down here. That's how I funded this trip. I've been staying in hostels because that's kind of, you know, what my financial situation has required. And so it's been, you know, a journey.
Yeah.
Being around people in their 20s, just getting pissed up every night, especially like having freshly given up the booze. And it's like, but I've chosen to be here, make the most of it, appreciate it. And then when I get home and I've got my own room and my own bed, I'll be living the dream.
Yeah.
In heaven. And I've been DJing a lot of the venues. I imagine you'd have played heaps over the years. The Tote obviously being one that's in the documentary.
Yep.
Played there a couple of times, and by all accounts, you know, that's like a Melbourne punk rock institution right there, isn't
it? Yeah, that was the home ground. We got our first Spring Plains, which was the first band out of high school. Rancid Spam was in high school, but Spring Plains, we had a residency at the Tote every Thursday where we had to pay $75 for the PA hire, and we'd have like seven payers. So he was a really nice bloke, Slim, from the Johnnies. His parents owned it, and he'd give us a couple of jugs of beer. But at the end of the night, he goes, sorry, but and we'd all be chipping in like $17.50 each to pay for the PA.
That's all we got, man. That's all we made.
It was unreal.
What about the Bendigo? You played that one?
Yeah, a long, long time ago. And I used to see a few bands there. I used to go and see a few rockabilly bands at the Bendigo back in the very, very early 80s. There used to be quite a few play there. And I kind of liked that sort of, it wasn't quite psychobilly, but the rockabilly with an edge. Sort of psychobilly hadn't really morphed at that part in Melbourne, but just hard edge rockabilly, which was really cool. But no, I hadn't played, we did play there, but very, very early on. So not for years and years.
And what's really interesting is in your pub song, you talk about the Esplanade.
Yeah.
And now that is like, you know, that is Poser Paradise. Feels like you're down on Miami Beach down there. I mean, I can't imagine the difference. The building's still beautiful.
Yeah.
They've retained the authentic old feel of the building a little bit. Tell me a bit about that place and your history with St. Kilda as well, because St. Kilda, by all accounts, was pretty lean and mean and wild back in those days. And, you know, the birthday party guys, I gather, were knocking around that part of
It was full on because you had the ballroom, and then you had the Prince of Wales, and you had the Espy, and then you had the venue, and you had Bananas, and you had Joey's, and there was this strip of clubs, and it was just incredible. So, again, no internet machine. You'd be walking down the street and you'd run into people who'd just left that venue, and you go, where are you going? They're going, well, we're going up to see blah, blah. I'd say, well, we're going down to see blah, blah down there. And it was sort of like all these meetings and just word of mouth. And you'd always end up in the same place anyway. But it was great. And like the Espy was sticky cut downstairs. It was just, there was the locals. It was just every part of the Fool crew used to drink there at the Espy, and there was always tables of cool, but you were tables of fool, and it was just a complete, that's where everyone would sort of meet. It was just a very exciting place to hang around. And then when every venue closed at 3 or 4 o'clock, there was a couple of drinking spots that would stay open till 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. We could sit there drinking, watching the sun come up. It was kind of like your 42nd Street or your Soho or whatever. It's just, it was music, art, drugs, and scum.
All the good stuff.
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
I honestly think Melbourne is my favourite city in the world. You know, obviously it isn't now what it was then by what you're describing, but I think what's great about this city is that it's still a very musical place. There's tons of bars and live venues that, you know, champion and support and showcase local music. The food here is fucking amazing and affordable.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like ridiculously priced. There's just something about it. Like, I could happily move here. I think it's way up there for me in the world kind of leading cities.
It's a good town. Like, I think it's really good. And back in the day, it was sort of like Melbourne had the the going music scene, and Geelong was also very much alive, but Geelong was almost your Detroit.
Right, yeah.
It was industrial, and there was a refinery down there. And
what sort of bands would have been knocking about down there?
Suggest
checking out.
Well, Bored were around there. Like all that sort of the Geelong crew came up, the Magic Dirts, the Bored, oh, so many Modern Lovers, shitloads.
Hell yeah.
It was good. It was good because, Geelong is not far away from here now, but pre-freeway, it was a bit of a drive. So it was a two-hour drive to Geelong. So they had to create their own scene. And it was good. Like, we always used to play down there. It was great. But just a different place. There's a million bands I could mention. I just got to remember them all. But they were fun. They were fun and just pure. And I only said I compared it with Detroit because it was very rock-orientated. Like Powder Monkeys and Bored, all
Powder
those
Monkeys.
Powder Monkeys.
Just the names of all these bands are so good.
Great band. Like, if put it this way, if Zeke had been around in the mid to late 80s, that would have been Geelong's finest.
Amazing.
That were just really, really, really tough-sounding, good bands. And just honest. Dirty jeans, black T-shirts, bang. That's it. There's no show, but all go. It was really good.
So when you first land in Seattle, how old are you?
26, I reckon.
Right.
26 or 27. I'm just going to get out of the sun a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shimmy on in.
Friday.
We thought we'd record outside for ambiance. Do you want another?
Yeah, I'll grab myself another beer.
One? There we go.
Got to rehydrate.
I love the Esky culture down here as well.
Yeah, but I reckon I was 26. 1990 it was. How old am I now? 62. 26 or 27? I can't remember. But anyway, still in my 20s.
So it isn't quite yet the cultural capital of the alternative music scene, but everything is bubbling away.
It's gone mad. Like, you've got Tad, Mudhoney, Nirvana playing at the Garage, which is this big vacant lot stuff, and just, you go there and every night someone's playing somewhere. Love Bad. Just so many bands playing. And it's just starting to bubble, but it was just before the big explosion, which, to say it built, I don't think it did. It just exploded, because like I mentioned on the doco or not, but we were playing with Nirvana when they came out here the first time.
No, this isn't in the documentary, no.
Yeah, it's not. So we did a show with them up in Sydney, and it was like a real Beatlesque thing. You get booked. A band gets booked and you get guaranteed a couple of $1,000 a gig. And then overnight, Nirvana becomes the biggest band in the world. It was just incredible. So I'm staggering home. It's about, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning. And Dave Grohl and Chris are standing on a corner in King's Cross in Sydney. And they're looking lost. Like, I was lost in my head because I was still drunk. And I'm going, are you blokes all right? And they're going, not really. I go, what's wrong? I'm like, someone died? And they go, well, we got a phone call last night. Our Smells Like Teen Spirit's gone number one in America. And I'm like, what the fuck? That's how quick it was. It was just like that. It just went bang. And they were just...
Just didn't know how to process the information.
Well, Dave was young. He was just a kid.
Yeah.
He was just a kid. And Chris wasn't on the piss then. He used to go in and out on the grog a bit. Kurt... His illness was sort of starting to grow at that point. And Courtney had just come over, so he wasn't in a good mood. But just to see a bunch of lads who, you stand in a lounge room in Seattle with a year before as they're heading off to band practice, all of a sudden the biggest band in the world. And to me, they were just the same blokes that were sitting in the lounge room. And it was quite a shock for everyone in the scene. I think for the world, really. How the hell did that happen so quick? And as I said, without the internet machines and stuff, it's like, how did it happen? Mm. It's like, I don't know. It was weird. It was weird. And, of course, then everyone signed, and then everyone moved to Seattle because you had to go there. And then bands were getting signed left, right and centre, and I couldn't work out why these bunch of mates that we'd played with got signed, but another bunch of mates who were a really good band didn't get signed. But everyone was getting signed. So, and we had an offer. And I went, no. Because I said, well, you've got to go and tour for 11 months and you have to do this and you have to do that. And I went, no, you can fuck off, not doing that. That's a bloody waste of time.
I love that.
So, you know, it just, that's for us, we were too ugly and B, we weren't good enough. So, and that's kind of reason why we've never been, you know, really big or famous. Probably don't want to be.
To have that self-awareness, though, and that honesty with yourself is pretty great.
Well, it's called reality. I'm an ugly bastard and I can't play any music, so it's quite obvious. I'm not going to stand up there and say a lie. Hi, I'm gorgeous. Here's a Robbie Williams song. I can't do it. And there's nothing wrong with Robbie Williams, by the way. He's all right.
He's got the looks. He's got the talent. He's got it all.
He's a showman.
He is. He's one of the best showmen I've ever seen. He made, I went to see him when he was over here, he made an arena feel like a pub with the stories he'd weave between songs. And
yeah, I haven't seen him play live. But I did catch him play at the grand final at the Australia Super Bowl of football. And I was, to honestly say, I was blown away. Like, to pull it off in front of 100,000 football fans at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and to pull that off in the middle of a Aussie Rules football field, I'm thinking, this bloke has something. He's unreal. Unreal.
Talking of showmen and people who are just at home on the biggest stages in the world, Dave Grohl has to be one of the best modern rock front men out there, and you've obviously seen him grow into that role, whether kind of closely or peripherally, or, you know, interchanging between the two. But, you know, you met him when he was a kid, as you're saying, and now he's the Dave Grohl that the whole world knows. Like, what an incredible evolution.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've still got a video, and I'll give it to Dave one day. And I honestly, the chats just did a tour with the Foo Fighters. And I said to Eamon and Josh, I said, look, tell Dave that hi from the Psychos. And Dave just went, what? He goes, I was in Nirvana when I last saw them. That's the connection I've got with Dave. Only once after Nirvana started, we did a show with Scream at First Avenue in Minneapolis, Prince's Club there. And I saw Dave then, and that was a long, long time ago.
Yeah, but we're talking 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Shit, yeah. But oh, look, it's blokes like that I follow and just go, well, good on you, mate. Good on you. You're a part of something that's now mythical, but you've created your own path.
Not many people can say they've done that.
Nah, he's pretty good. And look, any bloke that falls off a stage, breaks his leg and finishes the set, that's all right too. So, no, good on him. I mean, it's the tall poppy syndrome. Like, if someone gets really popular, everyone wants to cut them down. But I think, well, I don't know him personally anymore, but I know he rides motorbikes. I ride motorbikes. And
he likes barbecues, I hear, by all accounts.
And he likes barbecues. He loves barbecues. Yeah. And I knew him as a young bloke, and he was a good bloke. So I can only go on what I know and what I see, and he handles himself pretty good. And people that don't like Dave Grohl, they're just fucking jealous, aren't they?
That's where it all comes from, I think, especially with the punk community. You know, that like Green Day are a great example. You know, I think they haven't always remained musically in line with what people might call punk, but I think their ethics and their attitude and their drive and their authenticity all remains truthful and sincere. And I think they've done great things for punk as a culture.
Absolutely.
But people love to shoot them down because they're massive.
But this is the whole thing. I can't. Green Day, they worked hard to get to where they did, and they did it their way, which is really good. Like, you follow their history, they stayed pretty much independent right through. And then, like, why would you hang shit on Green Day for playing in front of 50,000 people in a stadium when those kids could be watching? Oh, I don't want to hang shit on anyone, but something that's absolute shite. So I go, well, if there's 50,000 kids
Coldplay.
Watching. Yeah, well, I didn't say that, you did. They might be nice blokes.
I'm sure. Chris Martin seems like a really nice guy, to be fair.
Yeah,
to.
So there you go. But I'd rather kids watching Green Day, Foo Fighters. And the whole thing is, Green Day and Foo Fighters are not young men anymore, but they're still attracting a young audience, which is teaching them that rock and roll's okay.
Yeah. And as we alluded to a couple of times, when you discover a band like Foo Fighters or Green Day, in your case it would have been Ramones, you then go back and you go, oh, well, there was The Clash before these guys, and there was Nirvana, and then there was The Stooges. And
Yeah,
that's
which
how it
is,
goes.
It's a fun journey to go back.
Sure is.
A fun journey.
Now, how far back did you go? Because for me, at university was when I first started going right down the punk rabbit hole. And I went all the way back through to like 50s rock and roll, basically, and the 60s US garage rock stuff that Lenny Kaye put on those Nugget CDs, all the, like the Sonics and bands like that. I went crazy for, and still am crazy for all that stuff.
And I'm still finding that stuff. Dean is right into that stuff. That
he looked like a rockabilly guy.
Oh, yeah. He goes great back hair. In and he's introduced me into a lot of stuff to go back in there. And I get in back into the, I call it punk country.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, go even.
Cowpunk.
Yeah, cowpunk. Yeah. Just go right back into just discovering stuff that's just.
The Beat Farmers and stuff like
just,
that.
Yeah, just. Go, yeah, just as far as you can take it, just with an attitude where they were just obviously never popular and everyone hated them, and that's a reason to go, jump on the hate train.
One thing I wanted to ask you about a lot of those Seattle bands is obviously there's a lot of darkness around the story of a lot of those groups, and I think a lot of people associate that music with dark, depressive, very introvert characters, and we've lost so many of them now. But what comes across great in your documentary and seeing people like Eddie Vedder in that context playing the game with the coins is like, and I've interviewed a few of them over the years, Buzz from the Melvins being one, and a lot of those dudes, and by all accounts Kurt was this way too, really funny and had a really wicked sense of humor, and actually weren't these morose, depressed dudes that the world thought they were. Obviously they had their afflictions and their struggles, and that, you know, took some of them under, but you know, you've obviously known a lot of those guys for a long time, and it seems like a lot of them are just, you know, really good fun and good guys and girls.
Absolutely. And that's why sort of when we hook up, like I was, when the US tour finished, just for instance, in November last year, I went round to Lucan's place, and Ed came round for our little Olympics. Yeah, we have a drink in, it lives down the road, and we just don't talk about anything about except just stuff, everyday stuff, and laugh. And the same with Buzz. Like, I've been lucky enough to tour with the Melvins a few times, and one of my all-time favourite bands. But to hang around with those guys and just talk shit and laugh and that sick sense of humour.
He's got a wicked laugh as well, Buzz.
Oh, but he's a wicked man. Yeah, he is. No doubt about it. But they're just funny guys, and just. And I think, you know, that's the thing. The first time I met Ed, he goes, do you want to go to a record shop? Do you want to go to a guitar shop? And I noticed a baseball bat and a mitt and his ute in the back of his pickup. And I go, let's go hit a ball. And that's all they want to do, is just do stuff. The last thing we talk about is music. We just have fun.
I love it.
Just have fun. Talk about our families and whatever. And just laugh and talk shit. You know, it's quite simple, really. You know, your work's out there. You don't take your work home. That's my theory. Get up on stage for 1 hour whenever we play, and then as soon as I leave the stage, I'm just having a beer.
I love it.
And just don't give a stuff. It's easy.
Now, was it the heroin? Was it the drugs? Was it the weather in Seattle? Was it a combination of those things? Like, it can't just be a series of coincidences that an entire scene. I mean, Ed, bless him, Eddie Vedder, is the last of all of those dudes now. They're all gone, apart from him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole Pearl Jam as a collective, they're all good guys. They're all, I like them all. Always been nice to me. But yeah, they, look, there's a lot of people were in that scene, and I, for some reason, and I saw it here in Melbourne, like 80s.
There's a lot of heroin in Melbourne as well, wasn't there?
The 80s was full. It was full, and that's why I didn't, and I lost a lot of mates, and, you know, and because of my age group now, I don't lose anymore because they're obviously all dead. But it just seemed to be, it was just seemed to be a cool thing to do, and I just could never get my head around it. Like, yeah, I'll drink as much beer as I can till I nearly drown myself. But I'm not sticking a fucking needle in my arm and risking my life to be depressed and vomit. So I just can't work it out. And I know it was that was a big scene in Seattle in the sort of basically early 90s. It's sort of Melbourne 80s, and it's like it's still a common problem now. But, yeah, it just infested in the music scene. And that's why I sort of fought against it. Yeah, and I used to hang shit on that scene, which I shouldn't have done because, you know, it's an illness. It's not – it is what it is, but I just couldn't go there. As I said, I'm to the pub man. Drink beer, laugh, go home, wake up, have a headache. Not take heroin and sit around in your fucking lounge room and nod off. I mean, that's not a life for me. And I guess – look, I don't know. I guess someone does it who might be a bit trendy, and you might be young and go, well, he does it or she does it, so maybe I'll do it and join the club. And it's sort of like it's just a nodding spew fest, and that's all it is.
What's up, dude?
Hello, digger. You need to get in. Yeah, hang on, I'll let you in.
Oh, I'll that for you. Cheers, Ross. We're nearly there anyway. Thanks, buddy. It's like Fort Knox up here.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There we are, my friend. So, as we do approach the end, first of all, thank you so much for your time.
No worries, mate.
I've really enjoyed it, as I knew that I would. I think what struck me about the documentary the most, and I mean this sincerely, is just what a good-natured, generous, warm-hearted guy you are. You know, that comes across. The genuineness of your personality comes across really well in the film. And it's come across, you know, today. As you're saying, it's just reality. It's who you are.
Yeah.
What is the secret to longevity? We sort of mentioned it earlier on about rock and roll keeping people young. And, you know, for any, especially bands out there that might be listening, young bands, what are some of the things that you've experienced that have taught you about longevity and
well, as far as music goes, I think the only thing that's got me through is leave it as a hobby. And I think that's the secret. You know, we've crossed on it already today about being under pressure to write songs or being under pressure to be someone you're not. But if it's a hobby and you can walk off the stage and get drunk and go home the next day and go back to work, it stays fresh. And that's worked for me. Yeah, I'll never stop working. I'll never stop fighting, you know, for just being broke and having to earn a dollar the honest way. And I think for me that works really well because I never got any worries about song matter. As I said, it's stubbing your toe and dropping your beer bottle. It happens every day. So if to do it, I'm playing a lot this year, but that's for a different reason. But it just play and then just go walk away and then play and then walk away and just don't live it. And just be yourself. Because if you have to live from what I've seen, and I hate seeing it happen to people that could have been really nice people and could have had the world at their feet, but they start living, which is something which is not real. Because
they buy into the myth.
The myth, and it doesn't last forever, unless you're the bloody Rolling Stones, and good on them.
Do you know what, though? Even they, and I obviously don't know them, have never met any of them, but when the Stones are on tour, Mick Jagger always does this thing. He posts it on Instagram where he'll go out to a local pub with a little cap, slightly incognito, and he'll just post from the Stones account, like, hey, we're playing Austin, Texas tonight. I'm just here at whatever Bill's Grub House before the gig. And he's still out there in life like a dude, just mingling with people.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Well, I think it is. I mean, we're all the same. But like people say, oh, you really, okay, look, I'm just like you. I'm a punter. And I will always, Roland S. Howard taught me this one day. Went to see the birthday party once. And I was in a phone box trying to ring a cab to get home. Roland Howard came and kicked me and goes, get out of there. I want to use the phone. And I went, oh, mate, great gig. And he goes, fuck off. And I went, oh, I just paid $10 to see you. I've seen you probably 10, 15 times. You just told me to fuck off. And I thought to myself, I'm never going to be that bloke. Ever. Not that I ever was, but...
Sometimes the lessons that we learn are exactly how not to behave and exactly what not to be, as much as they are, I want to do it just like that. It's also, I don't want to do it anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the band off for a little lunch outing, are they?
Off for a little stroll.
Mate, what an absolute pleasure.
Unreal,
what an absolute
mate.
Treat.
Oh, what a day to do it, too.
What a day to do it. What a setting.
Beautiful.
And last day of your tour as well. So I appreciate, you know, the time and the effort that you put aside for this today.
Effort?
Yeah, well.
Mate, if you weren't here, I'd be sitting here drinking a can anyway, so that's fine. You give me something to do for the day.
Love it. And in terms of, here's one final thing I'd love to ask you. In terms of, like, the key to remaining in the game on the road, when all the partying and everything else is part of it, are there any tricks? Or is it just you're made of stern stuff?
Nah, I think it is. And I keep saying this, like, I fall into the black hole all the time. But as Clint Eastwood said in Magnum Force, man's got to know his limitations. But it never works. Like, we fuck it up every fucking time. So we just go, well, and the whole thing is only ever blame yourself. If you blame yourself, it's okay. It's not like, oh, you got me drunk. I hate your guts. No, you did it, you stupid twit. So you just blame yourself and just own the crime, basically. Own the crime and just do the time. Simple as that.
Ross, you're an absolute gentleman, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Congratulations on everything as well. And like just how everything seems to be going now. It feels like this whole new chapter for the band. It's super exciting, and you must, you know, feel grateful and appreciative and
it's great,
thrilled.
It'll die on the arse that bloody quick, and we'll be doing nothing for another 10 years, so it doesn't matter.
And make hay while the sun shines, right?
Absolutely, mate.
And drink piss.
Absolutely.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers,
nice
mate.
One.
Cheers.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.